Time to take a look at the world of science and science research with Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA. Always fun to have him along, and certainly if you have a science question that's been you've been wondering about, a research question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Bassam, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Nice to be with you, Larry.
You're gearing up. It's the 38th annual presentation of Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Land of Shakashiri, and I imagine it's going to be another wonderful laboratory show for the citizens.
We are very excited about this 38th edition of the presentation. As you say, Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Lab of Shakashiri. It's coming up the first weekend in December. We have had a lot of requests for tickets. In fact, I must say all the tickets are gone. It's sold out. You know, these are free tickets. We just use them to control the size of the crowd because we don't want someone to show up and not be able to get
in
a seat. But I'm happy to tell you that Wisconsin Public Television will telecast this program, not live, but later on, six or seven times. And we will post the telecast times on our website, and I'm sure Wisconsin Public Television will do the same. So this is a very exciting addition for me because, as we said, it's the 38th time, and Michael Faraday, the great British scientist, is the one who started this tradition at the Royal Institution in London, and he did it 19 times. So I'm going to double it now. And you know, it won't be too long, Larry, before your daughter will be able to come.
I know.
And enjoy this. We want everybody to be in the audience and to watch it. And we will be sending the tickets out actually beginning today. So it's a very exciting time for me, and it is a tradition that I've been doing for many years. It is really my gift to the community, my holiday gift to the community, and I am very thankful and very grateful for the wonderful response that we get to this very exciting presentation.
And, you know, this kind of goes along. You spoke at a conference at Oregon State University on the scientist as educator and public citizen, Linus Pauling in his era, I think was the title of the speech. But this is your role as scientist and educator and public citizen.
I think it's very important for scientists to communicate not only with each other, which we do very well, but with the public at large. And we have responsibilities to the public. We must really share not only the results of our research, but we must share the values that we have in doing what we do. Science literacy is extremely important. It deals with the appreciation of science. It deals with realizing that science and technology play a very important role in our daily lives, much more so than before. All the great advances that we have in our society now are due to advances in science and in technology. And scientists must take more active roles in communicating with the public at large. So this conference, it was a two-day conference at Oregon State University where the great chemist Linus Pauling was an undergraduate. This was the 60th anniversary of his publishing a general chemistry book. Mm-hmm. It also was the 50th anniversary of his becoming a peace activist. Linus Pauling is the only person to receive two Nobel Prizes unshared in two different areas. He received the Nobel Prize in chemistry for his great contributions to understanding the nature of the chemical bond, you know, what holds atoms and molecules together. But later on, he received the Nobel Peace Prize for his very strong stand and contributions to ban atmospheric testing, nuclear weapon atmospheric testing. And so this two-day conference was an excellent opportunity to meet with fellow scientists and educators, and not only to salute Linus Pauling for what he has done, you know, he died in 1994, but to actually renew our commitment to sharing the excitement of what science is about and the values that we have in doing science, not to impose them on anyone else, but to mm-hmm. share them and to recognize that advances in science and in technology can benefit society, but also, if we're not careful, can cause harm in society. And we, in keeping with the sense of responsibility that I'm talking about here, I can't help but note that in the past couple of weeks, we all heard reports about the Nobel laureate James Watson making irresponsible statements about in London when he was promoting one of his recently published books. And I thought that Watson was irresponsible. Let me be mm-hmm. direct about it. And as a result, you know, he stepped down as the chancellor of a major laboratory that he helped found in 1968. James Watson is revered for his scientific accomplishments, but I take issue with what he said about the level of intelligence in mm-hmm. in the African continent and so on. And we have to talk about these things publicly. If we don't talk about them, then we can be accused of hiding them, you know, and not wanting to deal with them. So I really feel that scientists, engineers, technologists, mathematicians have an awesome responsibility both to advance their fields, but also to communicate responsibly with the public at large. And I think that's a very, very important part of what every scientist should consider doing. And as you said, that's what the Christmas lecture is about, is to share the joy of science with the community, both those who will come in person and others, many others who will enjoy it on television.
Well, let's take some calls. Frank in Oshkosh, I believe, is first. Let's go to Frank. Hi, Frank.
Hi. I just have a question. You know, on the news I hear a lot the phrase, officials say. Officials say this, and that really annoys me. And then on the radio and on the news, I'm always hearing people just throw out studies show this, studies show that, you know, Harvard studies show this. But rarely, if ever, do they cite the sources of, you know, where one can find the study and follow up on it. And I would like you to comment on that.
Yeah, that's very noteworthy what you say. I always like to find out what the citation is for whatever is being reported. If it is in the popular press, it's kind of hard to find. Sometimes, if you read carefully a story, you can find a reference to the original paper that was published or to the original studies that are being reported. I agree with you that we should be careful about attribution, and we should be making judgments ourselves about the validity of what's being said. Studies many times contradict each other. The findings contradict each other, and that's how science actually makes progress, by having people be skeptical about something that was said by someone else. But we must validate the observations and the conclusions, and enter into a discourse about their validity. But we need to know what the sources are. And I think journalists, if they're listening to us now, can perhaps be a bit more inclusive in including the sources from which they have received such information. I know UW Press, UW News Bureau, always puts a link identifying mm-hmm. the email address of the scientist, the phone number, and a website, and so mm-hmm. on. So I think the caller is right. We have to dig for it sometimes.
Have to dig for it sometimes. Newspapers are starting, I think, to do a little better job on that, but because of the web, because they're able to put additional information on the web. But you're right, we have a long way to go in that. Thanks, Frank. Randy in Madison, hello to you.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question for Mr. Shakashiri about the flight of a Frisbee in cold weather versus warm weather. In which weather will it fly the farthest and the fastest?
My goodness, I've never done the experiments. Have you?
No, I haven't, and I'm very curious because I'm an avid disc golfer.
I maybe someone in the listening audience has tried this. I suspect there could be an effect, a thermal effect on the flight of the frisbee. I know there's an effect on the person throwing the frisbee,
right.
But that's not what you're talking about.
And it doesn't directly relate. But I golf, and in cold weather, golf balls do not they're cold. They do not travel as far when struck as they do in warm weather when the balls themselves are warmer. But that's a different kind of propulsion that's going on.
Do golfers heat the ball sometimes before they hit them in cold weather?
No.
Maybe someone has tried that with a frisbee just to warm it up. And that's an interesting question. I really have to think about it. And whatever I come up with, I'll post it on my website, Randy. But maybe someone will call in before we finish too.
Yeah, the website, by the way, is www.scifun.org. Interesting question. Well, you're going to find a post on that sooner or later, Randy, so check the website. Ted and Toma, hi to you.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I have a question that I'll take the answer off the air. Several years ago, in fact, I might even been the first President Bush, was pushing for this big super collider down in Texas that was supposed to be like a mile in diameter, and I never quite understood what this thing was supposed to do, and did they ever go ahead with this project? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, thanks for calling.
The superconducting super collider project that was to be built in Texas was not funded by the U.S. government. It was a project that would have helped us understand more about atomic particles and more about the nature of matter and the composition of matter. So that project was killed by the Congress, even though it was touted as being one that it's going to help us advance our knowledge of subatomic particles. I must say that their research continues in this regard in Europe. And the Europeans, and along with the U.S. scientists, will be doing experiments that will help shed light on the composition and on the nature of subatomic particles. The reason the SSC was not funded in the United States was the cost. It was way too high. And President Bush in the early 90s, it was in the early 90s, could not prevail upon the Congress to fund it, even though scientifically, it was found to be a very sound project, but the costs were just prohibitive.
And we've got a caller who says that because air is heavier in cold weather, flight is better in hot weather, just as a golf ball is better performer in warm weather when it comes to frisbees. All right, so there's one person's answer. Air is heavier.
Great topic for people to go out and try.
Greg and Tony, we'll get to you in just a second. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, as we talk science and science research. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking science research today with Bassam Shakashiri. Thanks for listening in. If you have a question, give us a call. The number, 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Greg in Tony, Wisconsin, our guest. Hi, next. Hi, Greg.
Hello, Mr. Mueller and Professor. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling is I'm wondering if the professor has become aware of some of the work that a professor, Ted Sargent, has been doing up at the University of Toronto in regards to nanotechnology and its use in solar photovoltaic cells.
I don't know specifically of the work that you're referring to, but I can tell you there are hundreds, maybe thousands of scientists and technologists around the world who are doing research in such an area, nano particles, nanotechnology, trying to capture solar radiation and have it be converted to different uses. But I don't know the specific work that you are referring to. Can you say more about it?
Yes, he actually published a book called Dance of the Molecules. And my interest in this whole story was based on his contention that his nanomaterial could produce up to six times more electricity from the sun. He said that his material can capture the infrared energy as well as the visible light.
Huh. That's interesting. I'm not familiar with that work at all, and I will consult with some of my colleagues here at UW-Madison in the Materials Research Center, and whatever I come up with, like, again, I'll post it on the web, too.
It's, yeah. My wife, I was too bad my wife isn't here. She'd have some answers for that. She's in engineering and works with the nanotech folks on a broad range of, or covers the work that they do on a broad range of things. But we'll see what we can come up with, Greg. Take a look at scifund.org, and Bassam will probably have something coming up.
Yes.
Stefan in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, it's nice to be on the air.
Appreciate it.
Have much time. I have to go into work. I just wanted to comment on the Frisbee. As a flight instructor, I'm familiar with how airplanes work in different weather conditions. And generally, overall, when the air is cold, it's more dense and the airplanes fly more efficiently. They produce lift a little more efficiently than when it's warmer out, when the air is less dense. So one might assume, you know, I'm not familiar with all the aerodynamics, but one might assume that a Frisbee would fly better in colder weather just based on the principles of how an airfoil works through the air.
Oh, interesting. So that's that contradicts the earlier caller. But a golf ball, I know for a fact, doesn't fly as far in cold weather.
Yeah, that's probably just due to the fact that the substance the ball is made out of is cold and isn't as springy as it would be in warm weather. I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, that's probably exactly right. Thanks, Stephen. Appreciate it. Appreciate it very much. All right, another person heard from on the Frisbee. Let's go to Gary in Brookfield. Gary, hi to you.
Thank you for taking my call. I got one little thing here, one little topic, and that's got to do with the compass needle pointing north. It takes an energy to point that compass needle north. How come nobody's ever taken the time to harness that power and turn that compass needle into a motor, which would power generators?
All right. Well, what do you think, Miss M?
Well,
in some ways, they have worked on that, haven't they?
Yeah, but I don't. I think it's related to efficiency and whether you can really get something out of that rotation. So I again another interesting question here. That so the question is, you know, can we take advantage and get some energy out of the compass material turning?
Or the magnetic field of the Earth.
Magnetic field, yeah.
Of the Earth.
Yeah.
We'll ponder that, Gary, and something will probably show up on Bassam's website. Thanks for calling. Armando in Galena, Illinois. Hello to you.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Professor. I have a question that has always puzzled me. When I look at the wind-generating turbines, I see monstrous things with very thin blades that seems like they are catching very little air, you know, because a sailboat, if he wants to catch a lot of air, then you display the big sail. So what is the theory behind those thin blades?
I think it's related to the speed of rotation that you want the motor to go through. And the lightness of the material. I think the thicker the blade, the more wind it's going to require to get the turbine to work. And so I think you want to use light material, and I think you get something out of then even a slight wind compared to having to depend on heavy wind to turn a heavier motor around.
Thanks for calling, Armando. Bassam, two university UW-Madison faculty members were awarded 2006 Presidential Early Career Awards for scientists and engineers at the White House last week. Anna Scope, who's an assistant professor of genetics in my college, Ag and Life Sciences, and School of Medicine and Public Health, and Sterling Johnson, who's an associate professor of medicine at the School of Medicine and Public Health, and is the and William S. Middleton Veterans Administration Hospital, both received these awards. Anna Scope's work focused on cytokinesis, and that's a process detailing how cells divide, if I'm not mistaken, and Sterling Johnson's research focuses on neural disorders related to aging.
You know, Larry, this is a great honor that our two colleagues here have received. There are only 58 people nationwide who have been recognized as Presidential Early Career Awardees in science and in engineering. This is the highest recognition that the U.S. government gives to young scientists. And the goal, this program is about 10 years old now, 11 years old to be exact. The aim of these awards is to foster innovation and far-reaching developments in science and technology, and also to increase the awareness of careers in science and engineering, and to give recognition to the importance of connecting fundamental research with national goals. This is a government-sponsored program. There are nine federal agencies that go through a highly selective process to make recommendations, totaling just under 60 individuals every year. The scientist or the engineer receives financial support from the granting agency for 5 years.
Wow.
This and it's a substantial amount of money that is awarded. This is highly competitive, but it also provides a great incentive to keep young people in scientific and technological careers. And I think it's one of the better investments that our federal government has in supporting scientific and technological developments.
Yeah, you bet. Jerry in Beaver Dam, it's your turn. Hi, Jerry. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I'd like to weigh in on that Frisbee thing.
Okay.
If one imagines the fluid through which the Frisbee is traveling getting thicker and thicker and thicker until eventually it's water and perhaps ultimately molasses or something, one can conclude that the Frisbee would travel a shorter distance. On the other extreme, if one imagines the fluid through which the Frisbee is flying getting thinner and thinner and thinner until ultimately you arrive at a vacuum, then the Frisbee would fly just a parabola, like a marble would that you threw, and I think one would again conclude it would travel a shorter distance without any lift. So in between the two extremes, one would expect that there's a sweet point, and if research and development has been put into the design of these Frisbees, they're probably made in a way that they're pretty close to that sweet point.
Hmm.
You know, Frisbees and the aerodynamics that are involved in the flight of Frisbees are a fascinating topic. And we, most of us play with the Frisbee without really understanding how it works. But we, but we develop the skill of throwing it and catching it. In fact, we play with it with animals, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there are dogs that are trained to do this. But again, the flight of the Frisbee and the effect of temperature, the air temperature, is what the question is about. And it, of course, it's true that colder air is denser than warm air. And I don't think that there is any measurable change in the air temperature over the distance that I or someone else can throw the Frisbee. I think that temperature. I don't think there's a change due to that in that length of time. But the question is about, you know, throwing a Frisbee when it's 40 degrees or throwing a Frisbee when it's 65 or 70 degrees. And the temperature has an effect on the aerodynamics. I'm going to find out more about this. It's really fascinating.
Thanks, Jerry. Thank you for calling. Check out scifund.org here in a few days, and we'll probably have an answer for you or more information for sure. Mary in Madison, it's your turn. By the way, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty fast. Mary in Madison, thank you for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen. My question has to do with static electricity. Now that we're using the heat more in our vehicles, every time I get in and out of my vehicle, I get an electric shock. And when I took my vehicle in, they said there's absolutely nothing wrong. I can't drag a humidifier around with me. Do you have a solution?
Does it happen only to you or other people in your family?
I don't know.
Are you all charged up?
Thank you so much for this information. No, it just seems like I'm sure it happens to other people because when I went into the mechanics, they answered right away, like, there's nothing wrong. It's just the season. We heat more, blah, blah, blah. So I was thinking, you know, if there's some kind of rubber mat or something, maybe I could use.
To discharge before you enter the vehicle.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or a different shoe.
Well, I am wearing rubber overshoes.
Man.
And does this happen year-round, or is it now?
It's when you're heating more and the air is drier.
Yeah, yeah. The dryness has a lot to do with it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no solution, huh?
just a quiet discharge of whatever it is that you're.
What I do is I take my hand and I go close and then I go quick and get rid of it.
But I tried that, Larry.
it doesn't work. Oh my goodness. Well, that's another question to be answered. Actually, my daughter Emily, who's 4, came in and sat in on one of my shows here a week or two ago, and it was warmer in here, and when we put on her coat, her hair kind of stood straight up, and somebody from public television, we happened to be near the restroom, and she went in and got some water and put some water on her hair and stopped the crying.
Are you telling me I should miss myself?
Missed yourself a little bit.
I'm going to go home and do some internet research on
that. All right. Do that. We'll see what. And then call us back and let us know what's going on. Mike and Amory, hi to you.
Thank you. And this is a thank you both for being such wonderful Wisconsin resources.
Oh, thank you.
Well, one question about the... I had to comment on the Frisbee thing. One thing, and it's kind of goofy, but I think the ground temperature in my old days of playing Frisbee made an impact. It increased the lift. But then secondly, I had a question about the Super Collider superconductor.
Yeah.
And the thing that's practiced over at CERN... I think that's where it's located at.
Switzerland.
In Switzerland, yes. But it always seemed to me, and please, Dr. Vasiri, correct me if I'm wrong, is it almost seems like you're smashing two watches together and then looking for the pieces that fly out instead of actually... So I wonder, I kind of, you know, being non-scientific in my background... It just seems like we may discover unique particles, but they may be particles that are somehow blended. Does that make sense at all?
Well, this is the great discoveries have been made about the structure and the composition of the nucleus by smashing the nucleus. So the analogy that you give is okay up to a point, but we are able to detect debris, so to speak, from this smashing process and identify what the particles are, and based on their lifetime and based on their characteristics, we learn more about how they were bound together
mm-hmm.
to begin with. And so all the atom smashers, cyclotrons, and superconducting super collider, they work on this principle here, but with advances in technology now, we can, especially in computer technology, we can manipulate the beam that is bombarding a specific target, and we can detect very clearly the tracks that result from the products of the collisions, and these results yield useful information that help test theories that people have put together and have proposed, and also identify new particles or the characteristics of particles that have been suspected to exist.
May I ask one more question?
Sure.
Well, are you familiar with the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists?
Yes.
Do they kind of fit your bill about scientists taking a public role?
Do they what about science?
About you were speaking before about scientists being more of a public citizen.
Yes.
And in your opinion, I believe they're a very legitimate group. That's my own personal opinion.
Indeed, they are. Yes, they are legitimate, and they make responsible statements, and they advocate others to do the same.
And they do kind of fit with the idea of the citizen scientists trying to bring truth to the
citizenry. Mm-hmm.
Yes, trying to bring knowledge and trying to inform so that decisions that are made by us individually as citizens and by us collectively as members of society are informed decisions.
Yes.
Yes, I think it is an example of how scientists express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jeff in Sun Prairie, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. There was a great NOVA special a couple years back called The Elegant Universe. It was hosted by a Columbia University professor whose name I can't recall, but I was wondering if we, I know this is a big topic, but what's the latest in string or M theory, or where can one go to get such updates on the latest developments? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right.
I think going to the to pbs.org and look up NOVA. They are very good, by the way, at keeping up up-to-date information posted, even for shows that they have done in the past. So that's one source. Another source is to look at Scientific American, and you can even Google or any other search engine you want to use. Google Elegant Universe and find out about it. I suspect the person that you may be referring to is Michael Green. Is that
we lost Jeff.
We lost him.
Michael Green.
Yeah. But, yes, he is a professor at Columbia. So, one of the things that I heard recently is that string theory now has is falling in
less disfavor.
Yeah, in some disfavor, yeah. Of course, these are very profound and complicated questions, but the fact is that we are able to address them and to deal with them and help us a great deal in understanding not only the origins of the universe and the way that the Big Bang theory, Big Bang occurred, and so on, but in the end, Larry, these studies help us learn more about ourselves and help us understand how we can formulate questions that we can try then to seek answers to, even though some of the answers that we might end up with may not be to our immediate liking.
No. Tom in Blue River has a question for you or a comment. Hi, Tom.
Yes, good morning. My question is related to nanotechnology. We always read about the many potential benefits, and the suspected dangers make for wonderful science fiction. And I guess my question is for both of you is your opinion about the potential dangers. Are there real dangers, or is it just fodder for more great science fiction? And I'll take my call off the air.
Mm-hmm. Every new discovery, every new development, in my opinion, has to be scrutinized and subjected carefully to examination to find out possible adverse consequences to it. This is an area of great concern to scientists who are engaged in nanotechnology research areas, and it is something that we should pay attention to. I don't think we should be scared about it. We just have to be responsible in terms of what we find out and how we control the results of research in nanoscience and in nanotechnology. Yes, there could be potential dangers. It all depends what you do with the nanoparticles that you make or the ones that you discover. This is an area that we should be on the lookout for, and I know people in science and in technology are doing so. People at UW-Madison and elsewhere around the world who are engaged in this very exciting area called nanoscience and nanotechnology are not only making new substances and learning more about their uses, but some are concerned about the potential damage that they could cause. So it isn't really science fiction, although it makes a good topic for science fiction, but it's something that we pay attention to.
Thank you very much for calling, Tom. And Richard in Madison, your turn. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I just had a solution for getting shocked by your car in the wintertime.
Okay.
Just hold your key and touch the key to the car first, and the shock will go through the key, and it won't shock you. You know, you'll still get the little spark, but you won't feel it.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You've tried this?
Oh, yeah. I've been doing it for years. It works great, and you get to watch the spark in the dark.
And why has this happened when the air is dry, or?
Yeah, it's just when the air is dry. I've noticed it, too. I used to get shocked all the time, and I forgot where I heard it, but it works very reliably. Just got to make sure you hold the metal part of the key, of course. And just before you get in the car, just tap the any part metal part of the car, and the shock will go through the key and not through your finger.
I hope Mary's listening to this.
Well, I hope so, too. Mary, get that key out. Thank you.
No problem.
Richard, I appreciate it very much. And Bassam, thank you so much. Time flew. And we had a lot more callers, but it's always fun. You know, it's interesting to see what comes up as topics. And, you know, we're talking about shocks and cars, and we're talking about
Frisbees
and a lot of other things. And I know you're going to put some of the information up on your website.
Yes, indeed, and invite people to visit our website, scifun.org, scifun.org, and looking forward to the 38th annual Christmas lecture. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Bassam. Bassam Shakashiri is a chemistry professor and William T. Avue Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA. It's always fun when he comes by, and really glad. And I'm happy in a way that the Once Upon a Christmas Cherry in the lab of Shakashiri is sold out. And on the other hand, I'm sorry that you won't be able to get a chance to come and see Bassam in action. But you can watch on Wisconsin Public Television. Go to the scifun.org website or go to the Wisconsin Public Television website. The event is December 1st, so it'll be sometime after December 1st and 2nd. So it'll be sometime after that you'll be able to see that. Well, coming up, we're going to be talking about the communications landscape in Wisconsin, zeroing in a little bit, I would expect, on cable. But we'll deal with some other things as well with Barry Orton, professor of telecommunications here at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.